Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Money and politics, they go together like a horse and carriage. And today, the Supreme Court added more horsepower to that comparison. SCOTUS today struck down the aggregate campaign contribution limits, and that opens the door to even more money in the political system. It's your typical 5-4 split ruling down ideological lines. And in this case, it's the McCutcheon v. Federal Election Commission case, and the result is now individual donors can give unlimited donations to campaign committees and to candidates in the aggregate. So does this make it easier for Daddy Warbucks to buy Congress? Do you think that the rich have more free speech than you now? Or do you think that this is more freedom, and more freedom is a good thing? Give us a call. Tell us what you think. The number is 210-614-8980, 614-8980, and you can email us your questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org or go to our show page on our website at tpr.org. Our guest, David Early, he is with the Council for the Democracy Program at the Brenham Center for Justice at NYU Law, and Sheila Krumholz, she is the Executive Director for the Center for Responsive Politics. Welcome to The Source, both of y'all.
Thank you.
Sheila, what's your reaction to this decision?
Well, we don't take a position as a nonpartisan organization. We're here to crunch the numbers and say what we think is going to happen. And what we think is going to happen is that this will have a profound effect on this year's midterm elections. There's going to be more money. Get ready for more ads. And I think this puts a lot of power and clout and influence into the hands of already very powerful and influential people.
But these people who are giving money, these deep-pocketed individuals who love to give money to politicians, seems like they had plenty of ways to give with these super PACs. Is it actually going to be more money, or is this going to be redirected money, Sheila?
Well, it is going to be more money, and it's a different kind of money. I think of this as kind of a circle. The first half of the circle was completed when the Supreme Court ruled in Citizens United, allowing outside groups to raise unlimited sums from unlimited sources. Individuals like Sheldon Adelson could give millions upon millions of dollars to these groups, which would weigh in favor of or opposed to candidates, spending money purportedly independently of those campaigns. Now this closes the loop. It closes that circle by allowing individuals to give far more money to the candidates' PACs and parties directly. So they can't give it. They can't give an increased donation to a particular candidate or a particular party, but they can give to all candidates, parties, and committees, and ultimately deliver millions of dollars in what is called hard money, money which candidates can use directly on their own campaigns.
David Early, over at the Brenham Center for Justice, you had written why the looming McCutcheon's case could be worse than Citizens United. Why worse?
Well, I think it's worse for a couple of reasons. The first one is the court solidified its previous statement in Citizens United that access and influence are not corruption when you have access and influence to elected officials. And in the case, they treat this as something that's to be applauded when it comes to political contributions. The court said that if you give money, elected officials rightly respond to those who supported them. But the court kind of equates contributors with the constituents of those representatives. And that's the key error in the decision, is that representatives should be responsive to their constituents, not to their biggest donors. And the court really, really screwed that up.
And is it not just the promise of being able to deliver a lot of funds to a certain candidate, but also to, say, a member of Congress? If he doesn't vote the way that you want him to vote, then there is the threat of you funding an opponent.
That's absolutely a concern, and in fact, in that way, you can actually influence policy by not even making the donation, but merely being capable. And to be capable, you would have to, one, have enough money to make that kind of expenditure, and two, the legal regime would have to allow you to use that money in that way. And unfortunately, both of those are available for some people.
So it's the carrot and stick.
Yes.
All right. So our phone lines are open if you want to jump in on this conversation about what you think this new Supreme Court decision is going to do to our campaign and our election system. The number is 614-8980. And Phil has called in. Phil, welcome to The Source. Go ahead. You're on the air. Hey, Phil. And Phil's not there, so we're going to move on to Tanner. Tanner, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, I have a question. If, based on the ruling that was issued, can't they just lower the limits of what individuals can contribute? And wouldn't that solve a lot of the problems in terms of big donors being able to donate huge sums of money?
That's a good question, Tanner. Thanks for thinking that up and giving us a call. So, Sheila, is that something that could happen?
Well, this court is in no mood to lower the limits. They're all about freedom and adding additional leverage and latitude to the donors and participants, kind of equating this with wholesome democratic participation. So I don't see them seeking or anyone seeking to lower the limits on what an individual donor can give to one candidate or party or PAC, although certainly that would help ameliorate the tilt toward kind of mega donors that this decision provides. No, instead, I think this court is really prepared to peel away the layers of the onion that were put in place following Watergate. So there were a number of decisions following Watergate that really established the current campaign finance law framework. And ever since about 2007, starting with a case called Wisconsin Right to Life, this court has, you know, kind of one after another, broken precedent with past rulings and really set the stage for a new campaign finance framework to be established, one that offers a lot more freedom to donors to give to whom they want. And again, as David said, you know, that the transparency alternative, that was kind of a rationalization to allow for this freedom. Unfortunately, the transparency that the court is relying upon is pretty substantially flawed. And so not only in some cases do we have unlimited money from unlimited sources, but we don't actually know what those sources are. So there are a number of challenges for us ahead, I think.
But with this new aggregate limit taken off, is it possible we're going to see more money going into areas that we can see? Sheila?
Well, I think it gets a lot more complicated. So in theory, the money that we were talking about in this ruling is disclosed. This is money going directly to candidates, PACs, and parties, and they need to disclose those donations to the Federal Election Commission. However, if a mega donor wants to give $1 million, $2 million, $3 million at a pop, they can write a check for that, and it would go through a mechanism called a joint fundraising committee, which would disseminate those contributions, kind of dole them out to all of the candidates, PACs, and parties that were pre-established as beneficiaries of that committee by the party. So not so much
transparency there, because it would be going through this other institution and we wouldn't be able to follow the dollars that way. All right, we're going to continue our conversation. We'll get some more callers on the air. If you want to join, the number is 614-8980, talking about the most recent today breaking news decision from the Supreme Court about campaign finance.
I spent several weeks reading the record before the district court in that very lengthy case on this. And it was testimony by senators and congressmen that a handful of people can give hundreds of thousands of dollars. They know who those people are, and that those people do have undue influence, which means in First Amendment terms that the individual who in fact has wonderful ideas and convinces others, even by paying 3 cents to buy the internet or something, hasn't a shot, because it will influence people, not ideas, but the money. Now, there was a record on that. Here, there is no record showing whether this aspect does or does not have the same tendency. That is why I ask, how can I decide this on the basis of theory, when the record previously showed the contrary of what's been argued, and in fact, at least might show that even in respect to these limits.
And that was Justice Brenner raising some concerns during the arguments for the McCutcheon case. And today he writes the dissent, and he says that the majority's conclusion underestimates the importance of protecting the political integrity of our governmental institutions. It creates a loophole that will allow a single individual to contribute millions of dollars to a political party or to a candidate's campaign, taken together with Citizens United and the Federal Election Commission. Today's decision eviscerates our nation's campaign finance laws. And we're talking about that today on The Source. We invite your questions and comments. The number is 614-8980. Our guest, David Early, counsel for the Democracy Program at the Brenham Center for Justice at NYU Law, and Sheila Krumholz. She is executive director for the Center for Responsive Politics. So we had a caller earlier, Tanner, and he raised the issue of individual limits. And David, do you think that individual limits is the next shoe to drop before the court?
It potentially could be. While the court expressly said that individual contribution limits were not at issue and were not directly affected by this case, the overtones of the case certainly suggested that the court would look at contribution limits, other contribution limits in the future, with a much stricter scrutiny than perhaps they have in the past. So it could be, but it's perhaps a little early to say that's going to happen.
We don't have a case like that yet that's working its way towards the court. Sheila?
Yes, I think there have been a number of indications that this would be the kind of thing that they would look at. People thought that might be what would be included in today's ruling, but that was not addressed. So it remains to be seen what comes next.
Sure, and Justice Clarence Thomas, he wrote a separate opinion that agreed to strike down the aggregate limits, but he wanted to go even further. He really wanted to just get rid of these limits altogether, right, Sheila?
Yes, he wanted to really take us back to the pre-Buckley v. Valeo days in the early 1970s, post-Watergate, where we were, you know, grappling with how to set fair limits that allowed for freedom to participate while protecting the system from corruption or the appearance of corruption. And the Brennan Center has been doing phenomenal work on this. A number of other organizations have been kind of explaining the importance of this and the history, changes over time. But I think a central tenet of today's ruling and recent rulings is that this court is taking a very narrow view of what corruption is needs to be addressed by the government. What would be a reasonable justification for the government to impose limits? And so it has to be essentially a quid pro quo corruption or appearance of corruption.
Meaning, like, here's $100,000, pass the law that requires people to wear blue hats, and I make blue hats.
A menu of things that can be purchased for contributions of the kind that Representative Duke Cunningham went to jail for. And I think that is an example that is heartening, that people, when they do break the law, when there is evidence of quid pro quo corruption, people go to jail. And he had a significant jail term. But you know, I think there is a corrupting influence in money, and I think that this is something that people across the country, left, right, and center, are cynical about and respond to. They know that money does have the potential to skew and warp policy toward the very narrow interests of moneyed interests and away from the public interest. So I think there is, even for those people who do support greater freedom, there is a concern that money can have a negative influence on policy and politics in Washington.
Okay, going back to the phones now, the number is 614-8980 if you want to join this conversation talking about the new decision from the Supreme Court. Phil has called in. Phil, welcome to The Source. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay. I just wanted to say that we should have expected this. This is totally predictable. After Citizens United, we knew which direction this court was going to go. And this is certain, and there's no surprise here. I don't know how that they can justify this as being that this taking off this cap really doesn't still amount to what really is quid pro quo corruption in the final analysis. Just like you guys were saying, money corrupts, whether it's on a particular transaction or not. It's the fact that the money is there to influence people. Nobody, you're not fooling anyone. Everybody knows that's what it's for.
Okay, Phil, thank you for your comments. We appreciate that. David?
You know, I think the court needs to recognize that corruption extends beyond merely I give you $100,000 or $1,000 and you get me this government contract or don't enact this legislation that I'm afraid of. There are all kinds of subtle ways that corruption occurs. If I make a phone call to the office, is it treated the same as someone who's made a big contribution? Do they have something come out of committee that the legislator's in a committee? Do they block legislation? And then there's actual votes on the floor or the bills they choose to consider to bring forward or draft or what have you. And so to try to look at, well, he got this exact thing for this exact dollar amount is just completely impractical. And that's why we need strong contribution limits to ensure that these sorts of things can't go on because we just can't monitor every single little transaction that legislators engage in short of following them around 24 hours a day, which is completely impractical.
Okay.
And improper, I should think.
Well, David, the nut behind this whole decision is that money is free speech or something like free speech, and is that true? I mean, if we maintain that to be true, then if you got a lot of money, then you got a lot of free speech.
Well, certainly when you give money to a candidate, that has a speech element insofar as it shows, you know, I support this candidate and what he or she believes in. But that doesn't mean that you can use free speech as a guise for potentially corrupting contributions. And not to mention, the amount you give, as the Supreme Court said in 1976, is not really indicative of support, in that $1 million contribution from a billionaire would mean a lot less than coming from someone like me who certainly does not have $1 million laying around to give. And so I think certainly a robust public debate is something that should be cherished, and money is a necessary part of that debate because, we live in the modern mass media world. But we can't allow large amounts of money to distort our electoral processes or our governmental processes after the election is over. We need to find an appropriate balance between these two interests.
So, Sheila, over at the Center for Responsive Politics, now how much money can an individual give under McCutcheon?
Well, in the past, a person could only give around $120,000 per cycle to all candidates and parties to get altogether, and now an individual can still only give $5,200 to any one candidate during this cycle, and then limited amounts to specific PACs and specific parties. But now, following today's decision, through a variety of perfectly legal mechanisms, an individual can deliver millions of dollars all told to an unlimited number of candidates, PACs, and parties. So essentially, you can give as much money as there are pockets to collect it, political committees established to accept that money in each cycle. And that means that some of these mega donors who are now hitting the maximum at $123,000, $200 this cycle, they now may be able to ramp it up to give millions of dollars each cycle and become essentially kingmakers. You know, they'll be honored guests in the halls of Congress, and they will likely be receiving a menu of perks and donor rewards, as we saw in the 90s when the parties were kind of falling all over themselves to get to those deep-pocketed donors and offering them a bevy of options, meeting with committee chairmen, meeting with leadership, perhaps even getting an audience with the president or even a stay in the Lincoln bedroom. So there are all kinds of ways that these wealthy individuals are courted, and I would expect that today's decision will bring back some of those kind of very elite systems of perks and donor rewards.
But David, does election money, having lots of money in your campaign coffers, does that automatically mean election victory?
No, of course not. And we've seen plenty of times in recent years that elected officials or candidates have not won their elections when they had more money supporting their side. But the two main concerns with having so much money in being given to our candidates is, one, it distorts the electoral debate beforehand in that some people are able to give significantly more and buy ads on television supporting their cause, whereas someone like me can maybe only stand in the street corner or put on a website expressing my views. There's a big difference there. They have a megaphone, and I only have the volume of my own voice. And secondly, and perhaps more importantly, after the election is over, and if that candidate is successful, that's when the real harm comes, in that the elected official is going to be distorted, and due to the big contributions they received from those donors, and is more likely to be amenable to the views of that donor as opposed to being equally concerned with all of his or her constituents.
David Early, he's with the Council of Democracy Program at the Brenham Center for Justice at NYU Law. Also had Sheila Krumholz. She is with the Center for Responsive Politics. This is The Source on KSTX.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies is executive producer and host. Paul Flav is the show's producer. Management and oversight comes from VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Chris Udaly is the TPR web editor. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.